I have family that have served, that have, that are dead now. World War II, Vietnam, Korea, the Gulf War. My family has served in all of that. I have flags from all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Notes from a Native Daughter. I am Soldanela. I sit here with José Ramón, un alma, noble, artista, fotógrafo, pensador, as I've just discovered. And we're here to talk about your eye.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm delighted. Y Apple, que está aquí también. Bienvenido.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the White Shirt Project. You know, I read basically your entire website and all the people that you are profiling, and but speak on what you share of the genesis of this, which is very personal, and I think sometimes it's good to hear it from your own.
And I love to talk about it, so I'm more than happy to share it. So this started from, excuse me, a series of losses that I went through that, unbeknownst to me at the time, I did not know that I was going to go through a traumatic stage in my life within a five-year period. So this was the loss of my father, my brother, my sister, my mother, my house, my job, my relationship of 24 years. And tying all that together was childhood sexual abuse at the age of five, where I got repeatedly raped at the age of five by a family member, which lasted for about 2 years. So all that was hidden away in little boxes that my mind protected me from. So I wasn't able to react to everything until the whole ordeal was over. And I call it an ordeal because at the end of it, that's what it turned out to be. And that's when I sought help. And then I was diagnosed with PTSD, which could happen at any time, you know, in anyone's life. Soldiers that are going into war don't go in with PTSD. Some of them come out with it, with it severely. You know, a severe diagnosis of it. So about 5 years ago, I went into therapy, and I'm still in therapy, but this project started because I needed an outlet. There was still a lot of energy inside. It wasn't bad energy. It was good energy. It just needed to be manifested, and this is how the project manifested from that energy.
How do you reconcile loss for the first time?
I didn't know how to process it, which is odd, because you would think that you may want to mourn, process it in a way that is normal, I guess, because you see other people going through the process of death. So there was no norm for me. I was numb. It's just the opposite. But in being numb towards the feelings of death, towards that emotion that's supposed to be attached to death, I acted. I took on an active role to do what needed to be done to process the death physically, not emotionally.
Okay, that's profound. And physically meaning?
The arrangements, the running around, the churches, the funeral parlors, the anything that needed to be done that had to do with the foot and pavement.
And how does the photography, the people that you bring in, what about them spoke to you, and how do they help this healing act of creation, healing? What do they bring to you?
So this was part of theory and practice for me. So I went to school for human services and liberal arts psychology, two different colleges. I never graduated, but I was close to the certain things that were pivotal. And part of my schooling, I also did a few internships. I never put theory into practice. So I had all that energy and all that a little bit of education behind that, that I needed to do something with. I thought, why not, if this was also part of my healing process, expose that, bring that forward, and in the process, hopefully, have someone talk about their feelings and experiences. So I created a safe zone. I created a safe environment by expressing what went on with me, you know, everything that happened to me, so that this way, that feeling of, okay, I don't need to hold back. If I wanted to, I can just be open and talk about my issues, their issues. And that's what happened.
And how did you choose the people that you chose?
Random. I started with the closest members of my circle, which is not many, and I expanded from that. And when I approached my first one, my first model for the project was actually, the project wasn't even really conceived. Mm. Her name is Connie Pacheco, and she's the owner of Recovery Zoroas, another program that she started, which I interned for her many years ago. And this was a glamour shot, and I put her in a white shirt, and I took a black and white photo and put black background. The feeling, the emotion that I saw and felt when she looked at her photo, when she cried, was the beginning. And I knew that a white shirt can impact so profoundly and change those emotions in one person. I knew that it would do something for everyone else, including myself, because whenever I put on a white shirt, it makes me feel a lot different than what I feel inside it. And that feeling, it multiplies, it intensifies. I never wore a white shirt on a daily basis. I did service work for 30 years. So that contrast between a white shirt or white collar and blue collar, let's say, was very impactful for me whenever I did put one on a shirt. But that was what happened.
No, it's beautiful. What did you discover about people in their white shirts?
Not everything is what it appears to be.
Hmm. That's all right.
You know, this is that cloak. This is that, it covers a lot. You know, our exterior is not really, we wear it good. A lot of us do. It's when you take and start removing some of those layers that you see that there are a lot of similarities and there are a lot of truths. And those truths are sometimes and a lot of times unheard. And we're afraid to share them. We're afraid to expose them.
I share with you that if you share, you know, that very vulnerable part of your humanity, it helps the other person feel more comfortable. I wrote a book about losing my husband. I became a caregiver. I put it all out there, you know. It turned into a little memoir. It's a little fairy tale kind of thing. It's strong, but much like what you did, the trauma of the exhaustion, the desolation, the violence of, when I say violence, I don't mean towards me. I mean the circumstance can be so violent toward a person, right, when you're a caregiver. I turned it into it will help women that are caregivers, you know. I'm going to dedicate a little 10% for, you know, un diezmo de Dios to be able to offer, you know, like little laundry services maybe and menstrual kits and these little things that when you're in that situation, you can fall, right? And I'm really concerned about that peak of that place where people are just on the brink of either lunacy or breaking, falling apart. Like yourself, you took yourself to a place where either you were going to fall or not.
And this is how multidimensional this could be. Here it is. I was my mother's caretaker as well. She had developed Alzheimer's, and about 9 months before she passed, she had developed lung cancer. 3 months after the discovery, she had already lost a lung. For 10 years, I was caring for her.
So you know, it takes it out of you. It's violent, right?
And you have to put your feelings aside. You have to not be you in order to be that person for the one you love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that is violent. I think it violates the nature of our equilibrium, you know?
Yep. Yes, it is. It's very violent.
And I think of all these women out there in the world, and not just here in the States, but you know, refugee women in fleeing war.
And unless if you could really, if you've been there, if you've really, really been there, you will not understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know. It's a unique place. And when do you discover your artistry or your photography throughout all of this that's happened in your life?
It's funny you ask that. I've always taken pictures for as long as I can remember. I was fascinated by cameras and its technology. But I never really picked it up as a form of therapy, which is what I've done. Upon being diagnosed and going through treatment, I really didn't want to deal with the outside world. Shades were down, phone was off. I became a recluse. So my coming out was that with the tool of a camera. It was so easy now to take a photo of somebody. Can I take a photo of you? And I'll snap it and I'll walk away. And that was the beginning of my communication and using the camera as that tool to reintroduce myself and to acclimate with the outside world. It wasn't until I decided to make a project personal, like the White Shirt Project, that I realized that this was just more than a tool. And it was more than just a tool for me, which inadvertently became a process for other people to also communicate, which is what happened within the White Shirt Project. There's a lot of give and take. It's not taking a simple photo and walking away. Mm-hmm. There's about a 2 to 3 hour dialogue that takes place with this photo. There's a lot of sweat, mud, and tears, more tears than anything else, on both ends.
Qué precioso. That's so beautiful. So I'm moved by that. The patience it takes to be patient with people, right? And their pain and their valor, right? Because it takes so much courage to go out to the world every day. So how are you Puerto Riqueño? ¿De dónde tú vienes? ¿Tus raíces puertorriqueñas? ¿De dónde son?
Bueno, yo nací en Puerto Alta, Puerto Rico. Los padres míos mi mami era de Isabela y papi era de Jayuya. Éramos 9.
Wow.
Y montaron a 7 en Pan Am. No sé cómo eran los asientos, no me recuerdo, porque me trajeron a los 2 años.
Oh my God. And you came to the Bronx?
Aterrizamos en La Guardia y creo que de ahí nos fuimos para Spanish Harlem for a couple of months y después en el Bronx. But it's funny because when we came, my father thought that when you sign a lease for 2 years, you had to move. So every 2 years, we moved. So we lived in the same neighborhood in different apartments for a good 10 to 12 years before we moved into the city, and someone told him, you don't have to move. You could renew the lease. So there we spent a good 15 years until he passed.
And where are your other siblings?
a brother of mine had passed, who also served in Vietnam, and a sister of mine passed. She developed lung cancer as well, and breast cancer is twofold for her. My other brothers and sisters are spread throughout Pennsylvania, Florida, all over. The Bronx also, I have one.
We were talking before about the people in your life that have served the wars of the United States. Can you go through them?
Sure. I'll start with my father. My father served in the Pacific, World War II. He has I just reopened that box, and he was awarded the different medals. I can't tell you what they are right now because I can't remember, but he had a letter of discharge that I found. This is from my mother's belongings, that was signed by Theodore Roosevelt.
Wow.
So it was a letter of honorable discharge with the White House letterhead.
And then your brother served in Vietnam?
Yeah, so my brother, Juan, whose name after my father, served in Vietnam, and he became disabled. He developed PTSD from the war. Have another brother named Ralph. He also served in Vietnam. My uncle served in Germany, my mother's brother. My nephews and nieces, we have a nephew who served in the Gulf War. And about two or three more that I can't tell you exactly where they served.
How old were you when your brothers were in Vietnam?
I was a kid. I must have been, I can't tell you exactly, 5, 6, 7,
Chiquito.
Something. Yeah.
Do you remember them coming back?
I remember. I have a picture of my brother in uniform. I think I must have been about 6, 7 or so. And we took a picture together. It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible. I think it's something that might be unfathomable for people to realize that it was almost like a prerequisite. You really just don't know exactly the impact that it's going to have on the immediate family members, on them themselves, it's not something that's just, it's everlasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's part of your collective hurt, trauma, PTSD, that your family,
exactly.
I mean, that you have two brothers that served in this unjust war,
yeah.
Father, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Eso todo está en la sangre. Yo no sé how it transmits itself, but it flies, right? It's part of
that
hurt.
Absolutely.
You know, that your mother had to see two of her sons. I mean, she must have been devastated inside, right?
It was. I could imagine. I cannot imagine what she must have felt. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it's very hard to walk in other people's shoes.
Sure.
But if you're there throughout all those impactful moments and negative outcomes, I guess, you get to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what is next in the artistry realm?
Next.
Thank you for sharing that.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for asking.
For now.
The next thing that that I want to do is spread the message of the project. I want to be able to take this as far as I can, where people can really for any other intended purposes can destigmatize or separate themselves from the stigma of having mental illness or a mental health issue. I think that we've come to a point here in society where a lot of fingers are pointed at different issues that we might have, but there are no real solutions for them. And because of that, I think the ones that can hold their heads above the water and kind of advocate for others should take on that role, because so many people can't. And it's important if we can do something to do it. And I want this project to be that vehicle, to be that conduit between people that are suffering in silence, that don't need to, that can see a familiar face, that can see themselves within the project, use it, take it, and run with it.
Thank you. Qué bello.